morning. Please be seated. First up is State versus Bowman. And as counselor getting ready, go ahead, come on up to the bench. I do, in full disclosure, want to let you know the court received a to whom it may concern email from Virginia Mason about Mr. Bowman's mother. Doesn't appear to have anything to do with anything in front of us, but copies are available at the front desk.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Kevin March here on behalf of Thomaston Bowman. If I could please reserve 2 minutes.
Yes.
Racism pervades every aspect of our criminal justice system, and one of the many ways it does so is in jury selection. The record here establishes that the real reason the prosecution excluded or exercised a peremptory challenge on Juror 5 is because she was a black woman. None of the state's explanations for exercising the peremptory challenge were plausible, race-neutral explanations, and the record reflects a prosecutor who was flailing to offer internally inconsistent reasons for the strike that were not supported by the record.
Here the defense made a pretty abbreviated argument on Batson in the trial court. Several of your arguments go far beyond those arguments. Should we be considering those?
Yes, Your Honor, because it's unclear from the record what exactly the defense and how the defense initially raised the Batson challenge because it was conducted during a sidebar. However, the court proceeded to ask the state to offer race-neutral explanations, but the state proceeded to do so. So at that point, yes, everything is available. Everything that was discussed with respect to the Batson arguments should be reviewed by the court.
And we don't really have much in the record regarding the makeup of the panel, except the prosecutor's statement. There are numerous minorities, several in the box. So we can't really do a comparator.
With respect to the prosecutor did say that there were a couple minorities in the box. However, this was the only black woman remotely close to being seated on Mr. Bowman's jury, and that is clear in the record. The state did not dispute that when defense counsel.
Is gender part of the Batson formula?
Yes, gender is part of the Batson formula. Our focus here is on race, but certainly excluding a woman, a black woman, Batson would apply equally to excluding her on the basis of race and on the basis of gender. But turning to the...
Do you have any cases that talk about gender in that context?
Your Honor, we haven't raised the gender issue here. But turning first...
Well, I mean, that's why... you say that it's clear from the record that she was the only black woman on the jury. Does that mean that you're not sure whether there were black men on the jury?
That's correct. Unfortunately, and I attempted to obtain the racial demographic information for the jury. However, King County Superior Court informed us that information was not available, which is really a pity in terms of a court actually engaging in a meaningful analysis and doing a comparative jury analysis when that information is simply unavailable to the defense.
When the trial court ruled on the Batson challenge, the trial court seemed to focus on one aspect of it. In other words, the trial judge's belief that this juror would have difficulty making a decision.
Correct.
Is that an impermissible basis under Batson? And what do we do about the other bases the defense offered up, which are suggested in your brief, are not race neutral?
Well, first, we disagree with the trial court's contention that she indicated that she wasn't able to make a decision. The prosecutor asked her, "Do you find it difficult to sit in judgment?" She said, "Yes, that's correct." She repeatedly stated over and over again through voir dire that she was able to make a decision if she could see the entire record. She said that she needed to see over and over again. So we disagree that the trial court, we believe the trial court clearly erred when it determined that she was unable to make a decision or unable to render a guilty verdict regardless of the evidence, is how I believe the trial court put it.
Is that factual? Is that legal? Is that a mixed question? Looking at the cases, it wasn't really clear to me.
Well, and I think that it's not entirely clear. However, the trial court is required under the St. Cal decision and the cases discussed therein to discuss or to weigh all of the proffered reasons the prosecution gave. And Your Honor is correct. The trial judge here focused only on this inability to render a verdict issue, the sitting in judgment issue, kind of also stated that this issue with Juror 5's nephew and whether she believed he was innocent could be perhaps an inference. We disagree with that too. But what the trial court did not do is actually go through all of the proffered reasons that the state gave for exercising this peremptory and determine holistically whether that gives rise to an inference of racial discrimination.
Even if the defense isn't arguing most of those issues?
Well, the defense did argue those issues. Our reading of the record, the state gave the explanation, and the defense, you know, stated various things about the state's explanation. And then the trial court, yes, has a duty at that point to go through the various explanations that the prosecution gives.
Well, the defense said, I don't even know what to start to say about the comments that this person's not intelligent. And the court said, well, no. Prosecutor said this person is intelligent.
Well, the prosecutor contradicted herself because she did say that the person, that Juror 5, was pleasant, an intelligent woman. Then, you know, a few moments later stated that she had difficulty tracking and that her answers were confused. So the defense was merely pointing out that the prosecution was giving self-contradictory statements, which is a fair thing for a trial judge to be aware of and consider in deciding whether or not to grant a peremptory.
A person can be intelligent but have difficulty communicating.
That's true. And, again, we believe that the record here, she maybe could have been more articulate in her answers, but she did communicate over and over and over again that she was a fair juror, that she would not rush to a decision, that she would review all of the evidence. I think that things like the presumption of innocence and the reasonable doubt standard to which the state is held are confusing concepts even for lawyers. So we believe that Juror 5 indicated repeatedly that she was able to serve on this jury and render a verdict based on the evidence, and we do not believe the state's arguments support.
So is that an argument that we generally give deference to some aspects of the trial court's analysis of the Batson challenge and whether there's purposeful discrimination, but here, we, as a matter of law, there was purposeful?
We don't believe deference is appropriate because the trial court did not undertake its duty under Batson. It did not engage in the full inquiry of all of the state's reasons for exercising this peremptory, and because of that, we believe that it clearly erred and no deference is required. Had the trial court actually engaged and commented on each and every one of the state's explanations, then perhaps my answer to Your Honor's question would be different. But under the record we have here, the trial court did not do so, and we contend that no deference is appropriate.
I know you're almost out of time, but perhaps on rebuttal you could answer this question, and that is, do you know from the record comprehensively what happened during voir dire? In other words, how many jurors were struck for cause by each side, and how many were struck on a peremptory challenge by each side, and is anything of interest revealed by looking at how those other jurors were handled?
Well, if I could just answer Your Honor's question very quickly. Unfortunately, there's not very much to enlighten this court as to the other peremptories that were exercised. I believe the state exercised more peremptories than the defense here, and the defense only exercised two, but I'm sorry, without going back thoroughly through the record, I'm sorry that I don't have a better answer.
All right, thank you.
We'll have 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Donna Wise, representing the state of Washington. The issue here is not whether there is racism in the system. No one's disputing that there's racism in the system. The question that's presented to this court is, did the trial court err in concluding that there was no evidence of purposeful discrimination in this case? The trial court found that these reasons given by the state were race neutral, and the court found that there was no evidence that they were a pretext for discrimination.
Did the trial court really find that? Because when I'm reading and rereading the trial court's ruling, all that I saw that the trial judge said is that I think that she may have difficulty reaching a decision. Did he ever really rule on the issue about the innocence with the nephew and so forth?
Well, what the judge said about the presumption of innocence, I'm looking at 11 RP now, is he was familiar with the case law, the court sensitive to the issue of excluding jurors based on race. My conclusion is the reasons that have been provided by the state, multiple reasons, for excluding this juror are not racially based and they are not a pretext for race. I think the most important thing she said was that she'd have trouble sitting in judgment. It seems to me a completely acceptable race-neutral reaction to that statement would be that this person would have difficulty finding a judgment of guilt against the defendant regardless of the evidence. That's a legitimate concern. Certainly the case law says that as well.
And then what is our review of that ruling? Is it a factual ruling? Is it a legal ruling? Is it a mixed question? When the cases say clearly clear error, what does that mean for this test?
Well, what the cases say is the court on review should defer to the trial court in areas where credibility and demeanor are significant. And certainly this is exactly that kind of area where the trial court is considering the answers that this juror gave, which she repeatedly said, I'm not sure what kind of juror I'd make. I'm not sure I can make a decision. I have to be honest. I'm not sure. I'm just not sure. And then when the prosecutor said, are you saying that you have trouble sitting in judgment? She said, exactly. That's correct. And the court had the opportunity to view that. That's a factual finding. That's an area where this court should be deferring to a trial court.
Of course, the trial court doesn't mention demeanor of the prosecutor as being a variable the court's looking at.
Well, the trial court said he was familiar with the law. He's not required to state all the things that he considers in that analysis on the record. This isn't like 404B where there's a list of things you have to say. Look at Murray versus Shiro, which is the Ninth Circuit case from 2014. They say, you know, that judge said, less than this judge said actually, said I find these reasons were not race-based. And the court said that analysis was sufficient. There is not a requirement that the court go through every detail of it. And I want to get back to your question, Judge Turkey. After making that statement about inability to come to a verdict regardless of the evidence, the court says about her nephew and how that implicates her ability to sit, she said she'd like to think he's innocent. The court continues, if I were sitting in the state's shoes, I probably wouldn't be as bothered by that, but it's not a pretext for racial challenge. So he does reach that one specifically
as well. A prospective juror says that they would have difficulty sitting in judgment and they would not be able to make a decision, they would have a hard time finding someone guilty regardless of the evidence, wouldn't that be a basis to challenge someone for cause? If they say that they can't make a decision?
If they said, absolutely, I can never make a decision, you could argue that they were unfit. It's not a bias issue. It's just...
Well, I guess my point is, why not try to challenge this juror for cause on the basis that she's unfit rather than make a kind of a strained interpretation of her remarks? I mean, I would hope that all jurors would not have an easy time finding someone guilty.
Well,
it's not supposed to be.
None of the other jurors in this panel expressed any concern similar to this. None of them did. The ones that talked about difficulty sitting as a juror talked about inconvenience, having to miss work or school, I'm not sure I can make a decision.
Well, I mean, I guess our universe of jurors is not limited to the ones who are on this panel, is it? I mean, it's as a general rule, isn't it fair to say that jurors will often express some reluctance or some feeling of the weight of the decision that they're being asked to
make? Many jurors, yes, Your Honor, talk about the weight of the decision, but that's not what this juror...
So why would someone focus on that as being, a race-neutral reason? I mean, I realize that all of these things are... People are, a prosecutor in a situation like this, and it's because of the standard, really, has every incentive not to say anything about race and to pick out, very serious-sounding reasons. But the fact of the matter isn't it? I mean, one of the reasons we have Batson and this kind of concern is the feeling that a black woman sitting on a jury is not as likely to vote for guilt as maybe somebody else, statistically speaking.
I have no idea what the statistics are on that, Your Honor. There's no suggestion that race had anything to do with this case.
Why do we have it?
As I agreed, Your Honor, that race is an issue in the system. Racism is an issue, but the state did not raise this issue.
But purposeful discrimination, when you know that that's the standard, there's certainly, it's just not that, and you know people are watching and listening, it's not that hard to avoid looking purposeful.
Your Honor, there's no evidence in this case that there was any race-based purposeful discrimination by the prosecutor. The defendant was not African American. No attorneys were African American. The judge wasn't African American. There's no suggestion. Like Cook, Your Honor was on the panel on Cook, I believe. In that case, the prosecutor was getting mixed up between African American jurors, raised the issue of race when it wasn't an issue in the case, said he didn't like the attitude, the juror was too friendly with the defense attorney. In this case, the prosecutor was asking about another issue when this juror brought up, I'm not sure I'd make a good juror. She's asked, why? Why do you think you wouldn't make a good juror? She says, I'm not being able to say for sure. She's saying she can't reach a verdict. What could be important, more important to the state than a juror being able to reach a verdict? That's a race-neutral reason, and there's just nothing racist about it. Now, as to the second reason that the prosecutor provided, that the juror believed that her nephew, who had been in prison for 30 years, was innocent of murder.
Why did the prosecutor make the leap to, well, that means she thinks he's innocent? And the court calls him on it and says, well, that doesn't follow. She just would like to believe he's innocent. That isn't the same as saying, I think he was innocent and he's in prison.
That's not the finding the trial court made, Your Honor. The trial court said that's a reasonable inference, that the inference the prosecutor drew was a reasonable inference. And the question is not why did the prosecutor reach that inference, but the prosecutor did reach that inference and was persuaded that that was a significant reason that this juror might have trouble being impartial, that she thought her nephew had been in prison for 30 years.
She never said that she thought her nephew was innocent. She said that she would like to think he's innocent.
Right. And as I pointed out, Your Honor, in the Irby case, this court last year said, when a juror said, I would like to think he's guilty, that reflected actual bias. So a person doesn't have to say exact words that would establish an excusal for cause before the state can, or the defense, can excuse that person using a peremptory challenge. Defense is arguing there should be a new rule. As to both of the new rules, Your Honor, I just don't think there's any support in the law for a rule that simply, at this point, that the state can't exclude someone because they have a relative in prison. But in any event, that's not what was done in this case. In fact, the state left on juror two, who also had a relative in prison for murder, exactly the same thing. But that juror said, yeah, I think I'd make a good juror. I have no doubt that my relative who's in prison is there correctly. Different answers, different result. The state said, this is a person who says they probably or might not be able to reach a verdict regardless of the evidence, and the trial court agreed with that, and thinks they have a nephew who's in prison. The nephew is in prison, has been in prison for 30 years, thinks that person is innocent.
Can we tell what the race or ethnicity is of juror number two?
No, Your Honor. There's no evidence about that. There's no suggestion by the defense attorney in the trial court that any comparable juror was a white juror and was not excused, which is the standard for comparability analysis. No one makes a record about who's in the panel, what people's races are. And from listening to him, you might suggest that someone was withholding information from him about the ethnicity of jurors. That information just isn't kept. So it's not that the defense is not allowed to have it. That's not information that is asked of people when they serve as a juror. What is your race? Thank you. Ask the court to affirm.
Uh,
Juror 5 never said that she couldn't reach a verdict. What she said is that she was unsure about her role as a juror. It was the state that asked her, so do you believe you have difficulty sitting in judgment of others? Yes, I do. That will always lead to a plausible-sounding race-neutral explanation, because if the answer is yes, as it was here, the state can argue, oh, well, this juror is too soft to be a prosecution juror. If the answer is no, as Judge Becker pointed out, then the prosecution could just as easily argue, well, this juror is not taking her responsibilities seriously enough. So either way, that's not a good question for a juror to bet whether this was a race-neutral explanation or not. The state repeatedly focused on Juror 5, kept returning to Juror 5 over and over and over again with regard to her nephew. That in and of itself indicates that the state was fishing for a race-neutral explanation, and that's what the state got when the state actually asked Juror 5 whether she would have difficulty sitting in judgment. As for the state also asked Juror 5 point blank, is there any chance, do you think there is any chance that your nephew is in prison unjustly? Juror 5's answer was, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. So the state's argument here that Juror 5 somehow indicated that she believed her nephew was innocent is incorrect. The trial court, to the extent it relied on that as an inference, was incorrect. All of the state's arguments about in this Batson, with regard to this Batson issue, were very internally inconsistent. They contradicted each other. That gives rise to an inference of racial discrimination, and we're asking this court to reverse. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Next up is State versus Eimer.